Welcome back, everybody, to the Brexit podcast. I'm your host, Tim Hemming, and today we're going from Project Fear to Project Prosperity. Britain is going to thrive after Brexit, says our next guest, the Chair of Economists for Free Trade, Professor Patrick Minford. Welcome to the show, Professor Minford.
Good afternoon, Tim.
Thank you for joining us. You say that if the UK leaves the EU without a trade deal and unilaterally drops all tariff barriers on imports, our country's GDP could be boosted by 7% and to the tune of $135 billion. I mean, that all sounds rather marvellous.
Yes, I should explain it's not just free trade, but also better regulation, because as we leave the EU, we take charge of our own regulations away from those of the single market that dominate the whole economy, but also the gains from controlling unskilled immigration, which at the moment is taxpayer subsidized to the tune of, we estimate, about 3,500 per annum per adult unskilled immigrant. So that's also an important element. And finally, of course, there's our net EU contribution, which comes in at 11 billion and is not to be ignored. So the whole lot together come to 7%.
Sure. I mean, there's been quite a few people who have tried to shoot down some of these claims, as I know you've gone head to head with a few of them. And I guess that one on the fact that we're subsidizing unskilled immigrants would be one that they would challenge strongly. What do you say to those people?
Well, I mean, the facts are quite clear about that. Under EU rules, we must allow in unskilled immigrants, in the same conditions as any of our citizens. So they are entitled to all benefits and tax credits. And so those can be a lot of money. And that's simply the arithmetic of our benefit system and the fact they're entitled, of course, to use the NHS and our education system and get housing benefits. All those things add up to the number we stated. And we've gone over this with a fine-tooth comb with all our critics, and really no one has been able to point to anything that's implausible about the numbers we use, because they're all published rates that the state, implements by law, essentially.
Sure, but don't unskilled immigrants come over here, work, spend money back home, but also pay taxes and add to the economy? I mean, in terms of the food industry, for example, don't we require a lot of unskilled immigrants to be out there picking fruit on the fields?
Well, I think that's a question for the market, if you withdraw that subsidy. I mean, if you actually subsidize unskilled immigrant workers who you say they pay some tax, they pay a little tax, but they get far more in benefits because they're low paid workers, and of course they're entitled to bring their families here in full, and that's the point. They get enormous subsidies from the taxpayer. I think the issue is, if you withdrew that subsidy, which is completely against the economic interests of our citizens, then we could see what would happen. I think many more UK workers will be attracted by the higher wages into these occupations. And many of these occupations, if they paid proper wages that aren't subsidized, could contract. I mean, they could be done in other ways or replaced by other activities in the economy. So I think we need to let the market work here. But when you're giving something like a 20-25% subsidy to a particular type of work and worker, you get consequences that are economically undesirable.
Do you think, as we leave the European Union, that some of the gains that you've outlined, will they appear in the short term, or will it be a longer term benefit, looking at your forecasting models?
Well, we think it'll come through over about a period of 5 years, as soon as it's allowed to happen in terms of the changes that we're talking about here, of free trade and reduction in regulation towards pragmatic UK regulation. Usually there are some time lags involved, of course. Yes, it could be 5 years, it could be a little bit more. But the point that we make is that these things are all positive, and also they're assisted by the very large Brexit devaluation, which is causing a huge increase in profitability of traded activity in the UK, and is acting as a kind of booster in the short run to the economy, and also a rebalancing of the economy away from consumption towards exports and, investment and so forth.
Just sticking with trade then, is it not a concern that when we leave the European Union again, that given we currently have so much trade with our EU partners, that the increase in tariffs as we step out will in some way harm us?
Well, of course, what we would like to do is to have unilateral free trade with everybody. And then that is the key benefit which, comes from free trade. It brings down your prices. The gains to our consumers are something like 8%. And that puts a stimulus of competition into your economy so that productivity rises. And that's how you get these gains. When we talk about, will we have tariffs with the EU? Well, that very much depends on what trade agreement we make with them. If it's one where there are zero tariffs on both sides, that's well and good. If, in fact, we can't succeed in reaching a trade agreement with them, actually the tariffs on manufacturers with the EU are very low. Something of the order of 3 to 5% on average. They are really quite small and can be easily absorbed, I think. And hopefully in the long run, if we can't achieve a free trade agreement in the short run with the EU, we will achieve one in the longer run, because it makes no sense for them to put tariffs, however small, on us, or for us to put tariffs, however small, on them. And I hope in any case that we wouldn't put tariffs on them, because that just simply creates a further little problem for both sides.
If, from a European Union perspective, though, if trade is not completely the top priority and actually political unity is much more of a driving force, then to go to unilateral free trade, surely that's not something that they would like to do with Britain, because therefore other countries, then they look at the British situation and say, you are having your cake and eating it. And then this could potentially be the breakup of the European Union.
Well, it's very difficult to know what the EU will do or will not do. I agree with you, a lot of it's politics. But for us, the important thing is what's in our economic interest. And this is what we address in this report. We say, look, in our economic interest is not to have tariffs against the rest of the world that the EU levy on our behalf. These are very high tariffs. Including non-tariff barriers, the EU levies something like 20% protection on food and on manufacturers against the rest of the world. We want to get rid of that through free trade agreements. That's the key point we make. When we leave the EU, we must have free trade agreements with the rest of the world so that we can import from the rest of the world without tariffs and without non-tariff barriers, at world prices that bring down prices to our consumers. So we buy food from Australia, New Zealand, at world prices, the best prices around in the world. And we buy manufacturers from the US, from South Korea and Japan, at the best prices around in the world economy. That's what we think is the gain from getting away from this EU protectionism that they've done on our behalf. That's the key point. Now, obviously, if we don't have an agreement with the EU for political reasons, as you say, then that's a pity. But if we're buying from the rest of the world at good world prices, we don't actually care that much. We have to pay a bit more for what we buy from the EU because there are these tariffs that will still be applicable if we impose them ourselves, which we don't have to. And if they impose tariffs on us, we sell a little bit more, a little bit less to them, and a little bit more to other people because they place these rather small tariffs on what we sell to them. So I don't think it's a big deal. The key point in our calculations is that we do free trade with the world as a whole. And that's what brings big gains to Britain and takes us back to where we were you know, when we were a great trading nation in the 19th century and we had basically free trade.
I understand that and understand the importance of price in terms of trading relations. What about the importance of regulation? Note some, again, some criticism perhaps of your approach is that by dropping regulation, there's a chance that you may get flooded with cheap imports that have a very, very poor quality. Do you have any concerns over that? Or do you think our own regulatory framework can be robust enough?
Well, you know, when we leave the EU, we will have internationally based reasonable regulations like everybody else. I mean, we adhere to international standards. We will impose international standards. We have good standards, and those will be imposed. We're assuming that that will continue. We're not assuming any difference in quality because our calculations are that we get these lower prices from OECD suppliers, all of whom maintain good standards. I mean, South Korea, the United States, Australia, New Zealand, they all maintain good standards. So our comparisons are with countries that maintain good standards. We're not saying we'll import from sort of, you know, very poor standard countries, whichever, whatever they may be. We are saying we'll impose standards. The point of our non-tariff barriers is they're discriminatory standards that are designed essentially to keep other countries' goods out, even though there are perfectly good international standards. And that's really what we're going to get rid of, in our opinion, when we go to free trade. We will have reasonable standards, but not standards that are designed, or anti-dumping duties, or threats of anti-dumping duties or quotas that are designed to keep other countries' goods out, because we're protectionist. We won't act in a protectionist way with standards or with all these other instruments of non-tariff trade discrimination. That's the point we're making. And that, of course, is well documented in international trade practice. I mean, we know that the EU has these discriminatory standards from other studies as well. And that's what we're going to get rid of.
I understand. Now, just switching tack slightly, I know you've written in the past about trade deficit, and our trade deficit is quite a staggering high number. You'll probably have the number to hand for me. But can you explain to listeners why that is an issue and why it should be addressed?
Well, essentially, when you have a trade deficit, I mean, well, let's say a current account deficit that includes everything that you do with the rest of the world in terms of sending them income or getting income from them in various other ways as well, like services or property investments abroad, all those things, you have to pay your way in the world in the long run. Because obviously, if you run a current account deficit, as it's called, you're essentially borrowing from the rest of the world to pay for services and incomes that various sorts of services essentially and goods that you haven't earned the money to pay for from abroad. And so therefore you're having to borrow from the rest of the world to pay your way. And that's why you can't have in the end a long run current account deficit. In the end, you've got to balance your books with the rest of the world. You can't keep on borrowing from them. So obviously in the long run, you've got to get that right. And one of the good things in a way that's come out of Brexit is a big devaluation at a time when we have been running rather unsustainable current account deficits to the rest of the world, about 7% of national income, really, possibly more, depending on, you know, what you think the trend is. And that's been addressed in a way by this devaluation. I think that on top of the market thinking we'll need a lower exchange rate to sell more to the rest of the world because we'll have more that we need to sell to the rest of the world due to higher productivity and maybe due to a little bit of protectionism from the EU. Therefore, they've also thrown in a devaluation to sort out the deficit while, as it were, we're about it.
Do you see, in terms of the potentially boosting our exports, which is what the devaluation of the pound has done, it makes them cheaper for other countries to buy. Are there places where we can, have you got any specific examples of you where you see some real gain post-Brexit? Are there some countries out there that you think are going to take our exports?
We sell all over the world. I mean, we are a massive world trading nation. we sell all over the Commonwealth and the so-called Anglosphere. Our biggest trading partner as a country is the United States. Nothing to do with Europe. So obviously the European countries as a whole add up to a bigger percentage of the United States, about a bit over 40% of our trade. But, you know, we are a huge world exporter. I mean, 60% of our car exports by value go outside the EU to all around the world. And there's absolutely no problem with us. And we are the biggest world, we are the biggest and most important world financial center. You know, the city and all those services associated with it. These are all internationally traded goods all over the world. There's no sense in which you're a Eurocentric country. In fact, more of our trade goes to the rest of the world than goes to the EU.
Okay. And then I guess just moving on finally, really, the message that you're putting out there, are you ever concerned that it's reaching the right crowd? Just looking at some of the way you've written in the media, it's, you know, The Sun, The Telegraph, The Express. I don't imagine you have too many invites from The Independent and The Guardian from your views.
Well, The Guardian has followed what we've said, and so has The Independent. I mean, they may disagree with certain points we make, but to be quite honest with you, we want to engage with the whole of the intelligentsia and the economics community, and we don't have this sort of feeling that because, you know, we're talking about Brexit, we should not talk about good economics. The point we're making is it's good economics to do Brexit. It's going to stimulate our economy. Free trade and competition, better regulation, and sensible control of unskilled immigration, which is currently heavily subsidized against economic principles. That's good economics to get that right, to go to free trade, to go to better regulation, and to go to sensible control of unskilled immigration. That's all good economics. And we're not unwilling to engage with Guardian readers or Independent readers or watchers of Channel 4. You know, on the contrary, we think that this is good for ordinary people whom Labour represent. We're not party political in any way. We are for the economics here, and we think this economics is working for ordinary people, and especially for poorer people who pay much more for food, you know, than they should, and food's very important to them, and pay much more for rent than they should, and rent is very important to them. And also are discriminated against by low-wage competition from unskilled workers who are subsidized from abroad. I mean, this makes no sense for poorer people. And so this is something The Guardian and The Independent should be very concerned about. And we're engaging with them willingly, hoping they'll engage with us to understand the economics.
I also just having a look in the Economist for Free Trade site and doing a little research there. You've got a 26 strong team, including the advisors, but they're all men. I just wondered why there wasn't a single woman amongst you.
Well, I really can't tell you about that. I mean, of course, plenty of women are on in favour of Brexit. There aren't that many women who actually do trade economics. But we have women on our side, like Ruth Lee, who aren't actually members of the group, but of course are sympathetic to our cause. And there are many other women, I can tell you, who are on our side, just happen not to be members of our group for various reasons, you know, which to do with whether they're too busy or whatever it might be. I mean, not everybody's a member of our group, but many people are on our side in this discussion who are good economists, good, well-known UK applied economists. And that includes a lot of women.
And just very finally, and I know I've said this finally three times now, but in terms of the attitude and the positive or negativity around Brexit, are you fed up of Remainers or Remoners, perhaps, if we could call them? Do you think they could all bring us down together?
Well, I'm not fed up with anybody. I mean, I just would like them to engage with the arguments. I mean, I think the British people, you know, deserve to be given good economics and sensible arguments and to be engaged with in an adult way. Some of the criticism that we've had from from fellow economists or from journalists, politicians, has been frankly rather childish and not what we would expect at this stage where we've had a referendum. Yes, in the referendum, people said lots of things. It was very, very high octane, a lot of passion. But now we're talking about the future of our country and the right policies. Assuming that we're going to have Brexit, which is what people have voted for, and a meaningful Brexit. Therefore, what we're saying is, look, let's look at the economics of this. Let's get it right. These are the policies that will bring you the economics gains. Let's engage with this across the political spectrum and get it right. Let's not have any more slogans. Let's not have any more moaning or whatever it is about, we'd like a different referendum. Let's get down to making Brexit work in a good way and making sure that the policies that are used in Brexit, which has given us these huge opportunities to make a big economic improvement in our in our growth rate for the next decade or so. Let's make sure we get that growth rate improvement, and don't let's throw it away by sort of being unwilling to look carefully at the economic policies.
Professor Patrick Minford, thank you for joining us today on the Brexit Podcast.
That's all for today, folks. The show's been brought to you by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming and Warren Pohl, and the theme music by Kevin MacLeod. For all things Brexit podcasts, go to brexitpodcast.com, and we look forward to welcoming you to a future episode.